Mr. Pretzel, do you have anything you want to add in regard to the third case?
Well, the only thing I was going to add is no one's asked, but in terms of the, if the court were to impose probation, I thought it would be appropriate to just enunciate what I thought would be the appropriate terms of probation. So in my view, this probation, and as well as any probation as a result of a trust account violation, should include a probation monitor, namely the OCDC. It should include quarterly reporting, responsibility to our office, compliance with the rules of professional conduct. Generally, we would ask for some sort of trust account mentor to be established, whether the court thinks that's appropriate or not. It's up to you, but some sort of periodic review by someone other than our office who is an expert with trust accounts, and maybe they've already done that through some association with an accountant or something. And then, most importantly, some sort of allowance for us to conduct random trust account audits during the course of the probation. We're asking for a one-year probation with those terms included.
In terms of progressive discipline, though, and I know Mr. Baer, as a result of the Chief Justice allowing him to talk to each client individually as to which they prefer, we're going to get something back on that. But in terms of progressive discipline, with attorney with no discipline, the lowest form of discipline here would be, according to you, reprimand and then probation. Is that right?
Well, but I don't think graduated discipline or progressive discipline, as discussed in Ehler, the Ehler case, really applies. In other words, you can't have a case where progressive discipline, and it doesn't even apply in a case like this. This is their first violation, but that doesn't mean that that first violation shouldn't be something more than a reprimand. You know, there have been cases where attorneys with no record steal money from their trust account and they get disbarred. Mm-hmm. So, Judge Draper, in my view, progressive discipline probably doesn't apply in a case like this either because there's no prior discipline. And in my view, the proper sanction here should be probation and skipping over reprimand. So, yes, hopefully that answers your question. Thank you.
Are you giving me another 15 minutes?
Yes, sir.
I don't think I'll use those. But thank you. Sitting here trying to fashion discipline. I'm going to limit my argument here to, I understand that Mr. Pretzel wants some type of monitoring, even though I think we've gone well on our way of doing that. I'm going to suggest a hybrid of my own. And I don't think Mr. Pretzel actually answered Judge Draper's question of a few minutes ago when you asked, Your Honor, if there's ever a case where admonition is proper for commingling or a breach of trust account. And the answer is yes, it's many times that occurs at the panel hearing level, and there have been over the years all sorts of those, no different than the one that we had, all three of them that we had. I mean, if you look back at these, if you pull the Supreme Court files, you will see that there many times that's how these end, and they have over the years with an admonition. There's nothing in the rules that prevents a trust violation to start at a reprimand. I mean, the panel gave us, the three of my clients, admonitions. Had Mr. Pretzel wanted to, he could have accepted that. That would have been the end of it. There's nothing in the rule that says, no, you guys made a mistake, you can't give an admonition. You have to start with a reprimand. That only comes into play if Mr. Pretzel first doesn't agree with the admonition, which is what happened here. It's at that stage that the hearing panel isn't allowed by rule to give anything less than a reprimand. That's why the reprimand was given. It was the least they could give. But there's all sorts of cases where you can and are not allowed to accept an admonition. I guess my complaint is that I believe the OCDC should have accepted the admonition for these three gentlemen. And if you read any of the transcript or you read the report by the hearing officers, you'll see exactly how they felt about these three gentlemen. So I want you to consider that, please. And then I understand the importance of monitoring. I get that. So what would be wrong with a hybrid of an admonition with 12-month monitoring? I mean, I'd be happy to be the guy who reports back to you on a whatever basis that is, quarterly basis, let you know that they're following the rules, let you know that I met with them, let you know that they're doing what's right, so that you would know from another officer of the court that it's happening, that they're learning, that they've been admonished, that they're being monitored. There's really nothing. I mean, if the point here is to make sure that they do what's right going forward, the point is to get someone there who makes sure, teaches them, and makes sure they do the right thing. I'm offering to you to do that for them. If in a combination of an admonition with monitoring. When I read the Crawford case, I frankly kind of looked at that as a hybrid of its own. I really didn't understand it. Now that I'm here today, I kind of get the feeling that it's a pretty new thing, obviously. Nobody even, I'm not sure which two or three or four or five or seven or six of you agree on it or don't. But obviously, as you know, as it was the Chief Justice said earlier, there's not agreement. So if we're going to have that hybrid and new sanction, why not an admonition with monitoring? Thank you for your time today. Very much appreciate it. My clients appreciate it very much, too.
It was a well-presented case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A rejected admonition is not an admonition. It's a rejected admonition. It's nothing. It's a nil action. So the panel's only option at that point was to dismiss or recommend some other sanction to the court. I'm chief disciplinary counsel ever going to come up here and recommend an admonition to this court. If it's an admonition, then it's going to be something handled at our office, and it's going to be a non-trust account case. It's not going to be a case with this type of negligence involved in it. I think it's important that the court consider the fact that this is not just these three attorneys. This court's decision will send a message to the entire bar in terms of the way sanction analysis is done in a case such as this. And I can't, in my view, emphasize enough that this would set a really questionable precedent to admonish attorneys who engaged in this type of neglect of their trust account with serious ramifications, theft of money from the account that only happened to be their money because they were mishandling the trust account by commingling their funds into that trust account. Finally, I just want to point the court to the appendix at pages 50 to 60. Mr. Baer's made a couple of references to Kelly Dillon's testimony that there was no client harm. You have to read the testimony. The fact is, the argument between Mr. Baer and Ms. Kelly was, well, they were made whole, so there was no client harm, and that's obviously not the standard. And Ms. Dillon was trying to point that out to Mr. Baer, that the very fact that money was missing, albeit nominal, $720 of client money, was client money that was stolen, then reimbursed by somebody. That is client harm. And so in a case like this, I think it's something that you have to look at what's necessary to protect the public, the integrity of the bar, and in our view, the least the most appropriate sanction would be a period of probation for this law firm's trust account. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. It's a well-presented case. Cases will be submitted.